We have shared a lot of incredible business growth stories here on the Proof to Product podcast, but one thing that I always try to emphasize is that business is not one size fits all. Every business is going to look different, operate differently, and have different goals that they are working towards. And in order to build a profitable, successful, long-term business, we have to be very intentional about the choices that we make. And that includes where we invest our funds, what type of support we bring into our business, the types of products we manufacture, and the revenue streams that we focus on. Today's guest is Beth Rozowski, the one-woman show behind Tiny Hooray, a small but mighty enterprise based in Arlington, Virginia. Beth creates stationery and gifts that say what we're thinking but may not want to say out loud. It's the tiny hoorays that keep us going each day and keep us connected to our people. She's a Paper Camp alumni and a member of my advisory board mastermind. Wholesale is Beth's primary revenue stream, and she's currently working with sales reps and 300 stores, including key accounts and independent retailers. On today's episode, Beth shares her business journey, why she doesn't want to hire employees, and how she's utilizing independent contractors for project-based and ongoing support for her business. Before we jump in, today's episode is brought to you by our Deciding What to Delegate free workshop. You can access this at prooftoproduct.com/delegate. As busy entrepreneurs, one of the biggest challenges is knowing where to dedicate our time and energy. And we're usually so busy doing all of the work in the business that we have a tough time identifying what we can even hand off to someone else. So this on-demand free workshop will provide you with three simple steps so that you can identify what projects or tasks to outsource so that you can stop being the bottleneck in your business. Get started at prooftoproduct.com/delegate. I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of four. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. Since 2011, I've coached thousands of brands whose products can be found on the shelves of indie shops and big box stores all around the world. If you are a creative entrepreneur that makes and sells physical goods, you're in the right place. Here on Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies for product development, sales, marketing, and more. It's like your weekly dose of business school, and we're going to help you confidently grow your revenue in your own way and at your own pace. So let's get started. Hey, Beth, welcome to Proof to Product.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you. We did hear from you in a previous episode. I think it was episode 234, which was a re-airing of you were a guest speaker on a Paper Camp call, and you were sharing all about how you had grown your business and scaled wholesale. And so for folks that have not heard that episode, definitely go back and listen to Beth and Tiffany Grimes. They were excellent on that call. But today, I'm excited to just chat with you about your business growth and your trajectory and all the really cool things that you're doing. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
So one of the things I admire most about you, Beth, is your intentionality in business. And I want to talk, let's back up the train a little bit about how you started this business while working full time and what that journey was kind of like to, because you've only been running this business full time for the last 2 years, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So talk to me about it.
I started my business when I was on maternity leave with my oldest child. So that was about 9 years ago. I started off letterpressing everything, which feels crazy to think about. And, you know, like many people, I just kind of started off with an Etsy shop. And then back then, Etsy kind of did their own wholesale venture. So I was able to get involved in that, I would say around like 2016 or 2017. And once I started doing wholesale, that's when things really started picking up. I found I didn't have the bandwidth to letterpress everything. So I switched to digital printing. So I was able to really expand my product line at that point. And so I've been doing wholesale since the days of Etsy wholesale.
Wow. And it sounds like that was when you kind of transitioned from more of a, and correct me if I'm wrong, when you were on Etsy, would you have considered it more of a hobby business that you were doing for exploration and fun and creative? Or were you really setting out to build a business at that time that would be like a long-term thing?
Yeah, no intention of running a business. Like I said, it was all, I was letterpressing at the time. And I really loved it. And I belonged to a community studio outside of Washington, D.C. And I had to pay for time at the studio. And so there was kind of, I was like, well, if I'm selling stuff, then that pays for my time at the studio after kind of maxing out cards for friends and cards for me. And so that's kind of how that came to be.
Very cool. Okay, so you switched from letterpress printed products to digital printed products. You've also expanded into other categories besides your greeting cards. You have pen sets and notepads and journals. What's your bestseller right now?
I would definitely say I sell a lot of pen sets. I have an Everything's Fine pen set. I sell a ton of those. I recently launched composition journals, which are really like bright and colorful and funny, and they have like contrast binding tape on them. And so a lot of those tie into the pen sets. So I'm really excited about those and expanding that product category.
When you came to Paper Camp, were you already wholesaling at that point or?
Only on Etsy wholesale.
Okay. And how did that do for you? I mean, I know it's defunct now, but.
It was okay. It showed me that I really needed to streamline things. My first order was from Clementine mm-hmm. in Vermont, which was like, you know, has since closed, but it was like such a beautiful store. And I was like floored that someone would want to order my products for this amazing shop. And so I spent a lot of time like, you know, tying twine around every like set of six. And it was just a lot of time and energy into packaging, which it really showed me that if I was going to scale, I was not going to be able to be doing all of that.
Yeah. Okay. So we're recording this in 2024. So it has been 8 years. Talk to us about where you're at now with wholesale. How many stores are you in and like how many SKUs do you have now, roughly?
Okay. I probably have, I would bet over like 250 or so SKUs and probably, you know, around 300 stores at this point. Something that's important to know is I actually worked full time for the first, I would say, probably 6 years of my business. I worked at a university. I was a manager of a library there. So I did all of my forays into wholesale happen while I also had like a full-time job.
A full-time job and you were growing your family too.
Yeah, I have three kids. And like I said, I started my business when I was on maternity leave with my first kid. And there's so many times where, especially in talking with peers and people that are like a little bit younger than me, I'm like, oh my God, I had so much time. Like, why did I wait to do all of this? Like now I have these kids that I'm managing. Like I would have had so much time beforehand, but you know, life happens.
Oh, totally. Your path is similar to mine. I worked in the corporate world for over a decade and I had overlap between the businesses from 2008 until 2012. I had about 4 years overlap. So before I went full-time in my brands and also was building a family at the same time too. And it, in some ways, yes, we had so much more time when the kids were little and we were, you know, on maternity leave or had the privilege of the income from the job that allowed me to reinvest in the business. There were benefits to that. But I also think back on it and I think, gosh, I was so like stretched thin. And I'm sure you felt that way too, right?
That's really how this is like so crazy to even say. So at the time that I transitioned from like letterpress to digital, I was printing on like a tabletop press. So for anyone who knows letterpress, it's not a particularly powerful press, but it's like what I could have like in my apartment. And we had it. I had my friend's husband build me like a little table. So it was kind of like the exact size that I needed, the exact height I needed. And it was in the corner of my living room. And we had it blocked off for my toddler with just like a big bean bag. And like I would print at night after she went to bed. And there was, you know, as my wholesale was growing, there was times where like I would be up at night until like 2 or 3, like trying to print and get all the stuff done. And then it would take me an hour to clean, like in my kitchen sink. And my husband was like, what are you doing? I was like so stressed. So that was a real inflection point for me. And like I had talked with some friends and they were kind of like, well, are you interested in like producing, like physically producing products, or are you interested in just sharing messages? And really, I love letterpress and I have such an appreciation for it, but I was not. It was so stressful producing those products on my own.
So how did your life and your business change when you switched to digital and you switched to really outsourcing production of almost all of your products, if not all of them?
Yeah. I never went through a period where I was like digitally printing at home. It was a very easy transition to like, well, I already have a printer for like catalogs or belly bands or whatever, like they'll just print everything. It was really freeing in a way. You know, there's so many limitations to like what you can print with letterpress. There's amazing letterpress printers. So I should caveat saying like limitations because some people do really, really amazing work. And I was not that talented. But just in terms of the number of colors I could use or like not having an all white card, those were really big kind of design changes that I really tried to lean into and I'm still trying to lean into. I'm a pretty like minimalist person. I think my designs are pretty straightforward. I'm definitely not an artist by nature. I think people are buying my cards not because they're like pretty to look at, but because they really relate to the sentiments. And that's really what I'm designing. That's what I start with first are the sentiments and then the designs kind of fill in later. So moving to digital production was really freeing for me.
Okay. I love this backstory because I've watched you grow throughout this whole process. I remember when you were Letterpress. I remember when you switched to digital. I remember when you rebranded to your brand now. And it's been really a beautiful journey to watch and be a small part of. So I just want to give you kudos that like you've been so intentional in the choices you've made in that you're making choices that fit the life you're living, but also are building the business you want to have. And you've done this as a one-person business since the start. So tell us about your reasons for that. And then I want to talk to you. You're a one-person business, but you have a lot of help surrounding you. And I want to talk about that in a minute. But talk about this choice, this intentional choice to stay one person.
Well, I feel like the intentionality is really only pretty recent. Like I said, so I went full-time with my job, I believe in the fall of 2021. So it's been like a little over 2 years. But prior to that, I had a full-time job. So, you know, I was gone 9 to 5 every day. And there's no way I could have had like an employee. Like I was doing all of my work in the evening after I put my kids to bed. Or sometimes, you know, I had a very generous leave policy at my job. So, you know, I would just take days off so I could fill stuff. So, you know, prior to working in this business full time, I couldn't have had an employee even if I wanted to. And then something else to know is that in my previous work life, like I said, I was a manager at this library. I had maybe 9 direct reports and then like a team of about 14 people. So I was managing a lot. And like when you have good people on your team, and I had a lot of really good people on my team who were amazing. When you have good people, managing is very easy. Like there were days where I'm like, I don't really know what to do. Everyone here is so good and they're good at stuff that I'm not good at. So like, I'm just going to let them run. But when you don't have good people, which happens, you know, every once in a while, it takes a tremendous amount of like mental time and energy to work through people. Or, you know, work on improving people or, you know, getting to a point where you realize this isn't working for either of us anymore. And so I think coming out of managing, and I was a manager, I don't know, probably over a decade. I worked in the library system for 16 years and I was a manager for the majority of that time. Coming out of that, I really was kind of not interested in directly, you know, day-to-day managing anyone anymore. And I think for many people, COVID was really the first time that I realized I like working at home. I don't mind being by myself. I don't need to make small talk. I can run my own schedule and be pretty content during the day. And so that was like the first real impetus where I was like, well, maybe I do want to do this full time. I think if COVID hadn't have happened, I don't know if I ever would have really had that opportunity to test out working on my own.
Yeah. That's an interesting thought of if COVID hadn't happened, would you have made the jump to being in the business full time? And it's hard to know.
I don't know.
Interesting.
And then I also kind of found, so, you know, over COVID, while everyone was working from home, you know, my kids kind of entered into school age territory. And so that was the first time where my kids weren't in daycare 9 to 5 to coincide, you know, with the hours of my job. And I didn't realize like how much time kids have off from school, like not even, you know, they're done at 3:30, but just, you know, end of every marking period and professional development days and kids are home a lot. And my husband and I were really juggling, you know, kind of once they entered into this school time frame, like who's taking off and who's picking them up and whatever. And so in working from home and then working in my business full time, like, oh my God, I had no idea the flexibility that came with running your own schedule like this. I had just never experienced that before. And there was kind of like no turning back for me. I just didn't realize how much I would enjoy the flexibility that comes with this job. And that also kind of ties into not really wanting to have a full-time employee. I still work out of my home, which I really enjoy. I don't have to go anywhere. If my kid's sick, I can still work and they can kind of hang out here. A lot of times I will work in the evening after I put my kids to bed for an hour or two. Which again, I don't mind. If I don't want to do it, I don't have to do it. But a lot of times I don't mind doing it. And if I was working in another space, I wouldn't be able to do that. And so I don't really want someone else working in my home. I definitely don't want my schedule to be beholden to anyone else's schedule. I don't want to have to check in with anyone else.
That's a great point.
So that's just kind of the stage of life that I'm in right now. And so working by myself in my home really works for me right now.
I am so appreciative of you sharing this because I think that most people assume when they hear the word, I'm scaling my business, that word scale, that equals more employees, full-time team. But clearly, you're an example of someone that is flipping the script on that. And, you know, so let's talk about how you have sought out support and you are continuing to scale.
I was going to say, I have one other point.
Yeah.
So I went to Paper Camp in 2017. And at that point, it seemed like everyone that I really like looked up to, like the speakers who were there, the brands that I was like following online and, you know, kind of tracking what they were doing and seeing what kinds of products they were releasing, all of those stores were opening shops. That felt like such a big deal, growing teams. And I remember thinking, like, coming out of Paper Camp, well, like, of course, like, that's what everyone's going to do. Like, I'll just open a shop someday. And the idea now of having a shop where I would have to be there every day, or I would have to, like, you know, find people when I want to take a vacation. Like, I can't even imagine. I remember when I moved into my neighborhood, which was like maybe 2018, like looking around to be like, where could I, because there's a nice like little downtown. I'm like, oh, is there a place here where like I could have a shop? It would be so close to my home. And I can't imagine now having being tied to that kind of schedule.
Well, it's interesting too how like our ideas of success shift and change, because you're right. There's a lot of folks that come through Paper Camp or in our community who come in with a product brand and then they're already looking ahead of like, okay, I would love to have a brick and mortar someday, or I know that I want to have a large team in a warehouse, or some people are very intentional of like, no, I just want to keep it small. I want to work with the great shops that I work with already, you know, but the vision is cast. And then as our life circumstances change, that vision also changes with it too. So like what you're saying of, you know, no, I have no intention of opening a brick and mortar at this point. But, you know, again, I think most people assume when they hear the word scale that equals more and expand. Sure. I mean, the word scale implies expansion, right? But I think when it comes to the word scale, it is often correlated with team, full-time team, employees, and you have done an excellent job of growing and scaling your business without those pieces, but you have very thoughtfully brought on help in strategic ways. So can you talk a little bit about the types of projects you outsource and who, if you're open to sharing, like what kind of people and or teams you've hired in different respects? I'd love to just share some of the background on that.
Sure. Well, I think one of the first kind of obvious ones is printing. So like I said, when I moved from digital, I started outsourcing all of that. And then as my business grew and I started working with bigger box retailers, I've expanded. So I have like digital printers that I'll just have inventory sent to my house. And then I have printers that will just handle large orders for me. So I'm not touching any of that product, but I'm doing a lot of the project management and working with the printer. So I outsource printing. I outsource photography. That was probably the second thing I started outsourcing. I worked with a woman in DC locally for a little bit. She doesn't do that any longer. And so now I work with Verb House Creative, who are amazing. And after doing photography with them, then they started doing email marketing with me. So I work with them for all of my retail and wholesale newsletters. I have sales reps. I've been working with sales reps, I believe, since 2019. So they're a valued part of my team, not employees, but a part of my team. And so at this point, I believe I have 7 or 8 reps that I work with as a sales team.
That's awesome. You've also like hired people for very specific projects tied to marketing or branding or different things like that, which I like how you look at things from a lens of a project basis. Talk about that a little bit more, if you don't mind.
I think a lot of that comes from my background as a manager. Like I said, I had a team. A lot of those people were so smart in ways that I wasn't. And so I tried to be like, basically like a project manager, like, hey, I don't need to micromanage anyone. You guys know this stuff better than I do. So I'm just going to give the power to the people with the expertise and like let them run. And so as I've grown, I've started seeking out kind of more project-based outsourcing. So when I rebranded in my company in 2021, I started working with a woman who does packaging design and brand logos and branding. I've worked with companies on my website. Like I built my first website myself with Shopify. And then when that website wasn't working for me anymore, I reached out to a company and had them build me a website. So a lot of that outsourcing, I think, comes down to time and money. Like, I don't know how to build a beautiful Shopify template. I could probably learn. It's probably going to take me a really long time. And if I'm spending all of my time doing that, or I'm spending all of my time trying to research what makes an effective logo, that's time that I could be using on strengthening relationships with retailers or creating new products or things that other people can't do. Yeah. So in addition to kind of the ongoing partnerships that I have with outsourcing, I definitely do smaller project-based outsourcing.
I love how you are valuing your time in this equation. I see this more with like newer, younger businesses, because at that phase of business, we tend to have a little more time on our hands, but we don't have the cash flow, right? And so we have to get scrappy. We have to get stuff done and we have to figure it out. And like you said, you did your first website. I did my first website. It was terrible, friends, but I did my first site. So there were things like that. But as your business starts to grow and you start to know kind of you have a better rhythm of your cash flow, you know what's coming, you can earmark money for certain special projects. Are you now looking ahead to like when you do your annual budget or 6 month budgets, are you kind of setting aside a certain chunk of money for special projects? And do you have those in mind when you're setting aside your budget, or is it a little more fluid than that?
I think it's definitely more fluid than that. Like outsourcing a website is a huge chunk of change.
Yeah.
So that's something that I would really like plan ahead on. And when I started doing it, I kind of had it in the back of my mind. Like if I'm going to rebrand my business, I might as well rebrand a whole new website at the same time. And so I had the funds kind of set aside to do that. But something smaller, like I've had Alyssa Wismer, who is a Paper Camp alum, who's amazing. She has her own line, but she also does a lot of packaging and logos and branding. And so I've had her do packaging design for me. And that's a much smaller amount of money because it's just kind of like a one-off project. So that's something that I can work more easily into kind of an ongoing cash flow.
What I like about that example too is it gives you the creative space to design the pen set, for example, and think of the creative, mm-hmm. witty things that you're going to put on the pens. And like the packaging can be a real sticking point for a lot of folks that prevents them from taking things to market.
There's a whole art to it.
Yes, exactly.
And I don't know the science behind it. I don't know what makes it effective. I know what I like. I know when I'm in a store, you know, what kind of catches my eye, but I don't have any background in that. And so again, I could spend a lot of time researching it. I could take a lot of like online courses, or, you know, I could go to someone who's an expert and has those expertise and I can work with her to come up with something that works for both of us.
I really like how you give examples of both like smaller one-time projects as well as ongoing work. Like the work you're doing with Verb House, the photography is beautiful, one, but then the ongoing support with your email marketing on a month-to-month basis, that has to free up a lot of mind space for you too.
Oh, definitely. And it's also nice to have someone, again, I said I want no employees, but it's nice to have someone kind of like nudging me every once in a while, like, well, what are we working on now? Or like, what do you want to highlight now? What's coming up? Because it's very easy for me, again, because no one else is here when I'm working day to day, to just kind of have blinders up and put my head down and get orders out and create new products. Those wheels are kind of always turning, but like the long-term outreach, marketing plans, like that's not how my mind works. So it's helpful to have someone who understands me, and we've been working together long enough that she really understands my brand and understands how I like to communicate and what the products are communicating. And so for her to kind of nudge me and be like, hey, what do you think we should do now? Like, I'm thinking about this.
Yeah. Well, and two, she's wanting to do a good job for you and she knows she has deliverables every month. And so she wants to make sure that you're happy and have what you need as well. So I know that when folks start thinking about outsourcing, they can get really overwhelmed. And one of the things I tell folks is like, also look at your personal life and think about if you're not ready to outsource in your business, or if there aren't like projects that you feel like you could hand off to somebody, whether it's a one-time project or an ongoing project, let's take a look at your personal life. And is there anything that we could streamline in your personal life so that you have more capacity to either work or do the other things in your life that you want to be doing? And a couple of examples from my own personal life is, you know, we order our groceries online and we pick them up at the store. We have a house cleaner that comes. She used to come once a month. Now she's coming every other week. You know, there's things like that that have enabled me to be a more present parent, but also a more present business owner. Have you found that you're starting to outsource in a similar fashion at home as well as in the business?
You know what's so funny? I think, at least for me, and I'm sure for probably many people, I wouldn't give outsourcing things in my personal life a second thought. Oh, I don't have a lawnmower. We'll hire someone to come and mow the lawn every 2 weeks. Or like, oh, I don't have this thing. I'll just order it from Amazon and it'll come every month. and whatever. But I think like with these businesses, like they're so personal and they're really tied to like us as people.
Yeah.
As creative people, it feels almost antithetical to kind of give up some of that control, because all of the products are really like from the heart and from, you know, speaking to who we are as people. And so it feels uncomfortable maybe to free up some of those reins. But I don't know. You name the outsourcing that someone does personally, like I'm sure we do it.
Yeah. I have also started to train my kids. They have to order my two oldest have to like go and load the grocery cart online.
The stuff of dreams. My kids aren't old enough for that yet.
I know, but once they are. Although if I check, sometimes it's all like Doritos and I'm like, hold on, we need vegetables in here too. But anyhow, I just think it's important too that we note that it's important to think about what we can delegate to others in our business, because like you've said a couple different times, your time is so valuable. Other people are experts and knowledgeable in areas that we are not. Like, let's leverage that expertise for what we can. But then also, if it's not something you're ready to do, look into your personal life and see if there's things there that you could delegate or offload there. You know, Beth, what advice would you share with listeners who don't necessarily want to grow their team? And maybe they want to stay like you are, where they're focusing on being a one-person shop. They're not looking to build an empire. They just, you know, want to kind of build slowly, steadily, methodically without a huge team. What would you say to them, or advice would you give?
I always tell my kids kind of with everything, like everyone's running their own race, right? Like what I'm doing with my business is very different than what someone else wants to do with their business. And so it's very easy to like compare and contrast. Just try to be happy with like what you're doing and where you're at. And I know that sometimes that's like easier said than done, but I think that's really important. Everyone's business is different, and the way my business works for me and my family, and that might be different in 5 years. Once my kids get a little bit older and don't want to be around me anymore. Like, honestly, my oldest is 9. So they're, you know, they're still around a lot. So in a couple of years, maybe I'll feel very differently, but this is kind of what works for me right now. So maybe that's something else to remind people that like, what works for you right now can change. We can adapt and move on. And maybe at some point I'll want to learn how to do like CSS styles for a website. I don't even know if that's what people use anymore. It's been so long since I had to do anything like that. But maybe I'll want to learn it and then I can do it myself later on. Yeah. You know, nothing's forever.
Okay. So I want to recap that. One, you're running your own race. So everyone needs to do what's best for them. I love that piece of advice.
Everyone's goals are different, right? My goals are like, I want to be around and like pick my kids up and like hang out with them and like not be stressed as much, you know, as possible.
Yes.
So I have a business that's kind of crafted around that.
And the second thing you said that was really great is your definition of success or what you want your business to be will change over time. And I 100% agree with that. And I appreciate you mentioning it because it's something that we need to check in with ourselves and say, am I still working towards the type of business I want to have? Am I still setting the goals that are fitting my lifestyle and life circumstances right now? Or do I need to make some adjustments to these things? So yes, what we need now may look different in 5 years. And I appreciate you sharing that too.
5 years ago, I thought I wanted a brick and mortar. And here I am. I'm like, I just want to take like a long weekend and like not have to worry about anything and like just pack up the car and go. So, you know, all of those circumstances change and you just got to be kind of okay with like where you are.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Well, tell the listeners what's coming up for you. What's new? What are you working on that you want to share with us?
Spring releases coming out sometime in May, probably trade shows in the summer. So gearing up for that with my amazing sales reps.
Awesome.
And keeping on, right?
Yeah, I know. Okay. Tell everybody where they can follow you on social and where they can check out your amazing products.
Yeah. So on social, I am basically only on Instagram at Tiny Hooray. I don't really live on any other socials at this point. And my website is tinyhooray.com.
Fantastic. We will include those in the show notes so everybody can easily find you. Beth, thank you for your time today and for showing us that there's a multitude of ways that we can build businesses. And we can think about our business and the way we're operating them in a very different way than some of the other stories, success stories that we're seeing. And your success story is different. And I love that we're able to share that with folks. So thank you.
Thank you, Katie.
I appreciate you. A big thanks to Beth for coming on the show today and sharing how she has steadily grown her wholesale business while also maintaining the quality and pace of life that she is seeking. I loved what she said about how everyone is running a different race and that we need to do what is best for us I could not agree with that more. I also really appreciated how she acknowledged that our dreams, our goals, our life circumstances may change, which means that what we want from our business today may look different 5 years from now. That's a really important reminder. We have permission to change our minds, to change the way we do business, to change our product line, or even our team structure. And we all need to make the best choices for what serves us well in our stage of life and in our stage of business. Now, before I sign off, I wanted to remind you about a free class that I have. It's called Deciding What to Delegate in 3 Simple Steps. I know that many of you are searching for help within your business, and this free class will help you identify what projects or ongoing tasks that you should outsource so that you stop being a bottleneck in your business. So head to prooftoproduct.com/delegate to enroll. Again, that's prooftoproduct.com/delegate. Thanks for listening until the end. If you found today's episode helpful, please share it with a friend and make sure that you're subscribed to the show on your favorite podcast player. I'll be back next week with a new episode.